Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group. And every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated staff, volunteers, management, or board, or sponsors, for that matter. Thank you for tuning in today. This is Sharon Lockhart. I am the mother of the show now. They call me the mother. And because I've been on KKFI for so long, but we have some wonderful support, new women joining with us. Ebony Johnson on the engineering board, host, co-host, Marvita Oliver also joining us today, and absent today is Amy Bell. She's out of town. And our guests today, we have two excellent guests. Our first guest will be Billy Mahoney, who is a dancer. I must say she's still teaching dance at age 89, which is extraordinarily, well, almost 89. She'll be 89 in November. I call it good enough. And it's just a testimony to what women can do and achieve and keep on going. And second, it'll be Karen E. Griffin with the Kansas City Jazz Museum, who is the outreach community outreach coordinator. And Marvita will be doing that interview predominantly. Oh, we'll all be in the mix. So let's get started. Ebony, do you have some women's news for us?
Yes, we do have some news. Arianna Huffington, co-founder of the Huffington Post, a prominent digital media outlet in the U.S., announced a career change on August the 11th. I thought Huffington Post would be my last act, but I've decided to step down as Huffington Post editor-in-chief to run my new venture, Thrive Global. She went on to say that Thrive Global's mission is to change the way we work and live by ending the collective delusion that burnout is a necessary price for success. And on August the 11th, Simone Manuel, tied with Penny Olkosak of Canada, won an Olympic gold medal in swimming, representing the first African-American female to do so in an individual event, the 100-meter freestyle. I think that this win helps bring hope and change to some of the issues that are going on in the world. But I mean, I went out there and swam as fast as I could, and my color just comes with the territory, Manuel said. And that concludes our news for today. We do have, kept it brief, we do have a lot going on in the studio and more information to share. And I will go ahead and kick the conversation off with Miss Billy and just let you know she has so many accomplishments that I know we'll get into her stories. But just to highlight a little bit, Billy Mahoney is a native of Kansas City. She has been dancing for over 70 years. And has performed all over the world, appearing on The Tonight Show with Steve Allen, The Ed Sullivan Show, and more. She's been on the faculty of the Juilliard School. She's worked with Bob Hope and Bob Fosse. Currently, she is on faculty at the Kansas City Ballet Todd Bolinder Center and teaches all levels of tap dance at City in Motion. She directs and choreographs the Billy Mahoney Dance Troupe of tap dancers over the age of 50. She's a percussionist with the New Horizons Band, playing several concerts a year, and producer host of public access television series Dance On with Billy Mahoney. We are so excited to have you here in the studio, Billy.
And Dance On.
We've had just a number of conversations about now what exactly will we talk about, and I'm like, come on and tell your story, and we'll take it from there. So welcome to Every Woman, Billy.
Thank you. It reminds me when I first came home from New York, some business club asked me to talk about my life and dance in 12 minutes. I thought, how do you do that? But you ran it down pretty well.
Okay, good start. So, Billy, talk to us about what dance has meant to you and how it's, I mean, how you've, it must mean a lot to you for you to still be doing it at the age of 88, nearly 89 years old. So what is dance to you?
It keeps you alive, keeps you going. And I say the Bible says rejoice in the dance, praise the Lord in the dance. And that's what we should do. And we're celebrating a tap Tap Jam this Saturday. And once a year we celebrate National Tap Dance Day, which the United States Congress declared should be celebrated in May. And I say, you know, Congress says to celebrate tap dance, and the Bible says to celebrate dance. So if you don't trust Congress, don't believe in Congress, believe in the Bible. And if you're not sure of the Bible, trust Congress. But everyone should dance.
Yeah. You were talking a little bit earlier about just working, the different types of work that you've done and the different people that you've encountered and performed with. Can you talk to us about how it was for you to perform in times where, especially when women didn't have as many rights as we have now, and there were some predominantly male entertainment venues going on, and what your experiences were during that?
Well, I don't know, but one thing in New York, when I wanted to be a choreographer, I left Kansas City in 1950 and went to New York City and got a job right away. The union was just starting here in Canada. I'm deviating from your question, but we may get to that.
And, all right.
Anyway, the American Guild of Variety Artists, the union, had just started here in Kansas City, and being in college, I was put on the board of the union, and so it was surprising. I started dancing in the nightclubs when age 14 for the KC Mafia, and so that helped pay my way through college, because I danced in those clubs till I left at 20, and the money I made dancing in the clubs at night, I paid my own tuition through college and through the University of Kansas City, now UMKC. But so I went to New York, and they said, in the union in Kansas City said, go to the union. And so I did. My first day in New York, I went up to AGVA headquarters and showed them my pictures and what I'd done. And I was booked the next night and started out working in the Bell Tavern in New York City, and which was a very well-known nightclub. And danced there, and then I would just work regularly all the time. Yeah. And first television show I did was Arthur Godfrey and His Friends, because I bought the Showbiz paper, which they had told me to buy in New York, and bought it. And they were looking for a fresh, wholesome type who was a baton twirler to lead the St. Patrick's Day parade on the Arthur Godfrey and Friends TV show. So I showed up for that, and I was perfect type. And so that was my first TV show, and opened a bank account. But later on, after being in New York many, many years teaching, and a long career performing, and then teaching, and I wanted to choreograph. So I was sent up to one of the top agents, and he went through his file folders, and he said, "Why should I hire you?" He said, and he couldn't imagine the man who had sent me, and that he would send me. And they thought I was a man with the name Billy, and granted me the interview. And, you know, why should we hire you? And he went through the files, Jerry Robbins, you know, and the big names at that time. This was in the 50s. And, so I wasn't hired as a choreographer. There were no women choreographers on Broadway at that time. Yeah. And so that's the way the cookie crumbled.
Yeah. But you did make it. You did choreograph on Broadway, though.
No, I didn't. I never did. Awesome. No.
Okay.
I was in Broadway shows, but I never choreographed. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You had said that you started out at age 14 working in clubs in Kansas City. Well, how were your parents encouraging you at that time?
Well, my mother had to go with me and to the clubs, because I couldn't go alone. And so mother went, and when I was working a whole week, which I got paid $50, I paid her 10%. to go with me every night. And so she went with me, and both folks would go with me on Saturday night when I did. Some clubs were just Saturday nights, and then in the summer I could work the full week.
What were your friends thinking about you being paid as an entertainer?
In most of my life, I was shunned as a dancer all through school.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's lots of reasons.
Yeah. And you're still dancing.
Oh, that's what I do,
yeah.
And I determine someday I'm going to show them.
Yeah.
You've probably shown them by now.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. That's happened because I got the Alumni Achievement Award at the university.
Yeah.
Great. And I know that we were talking before you got on the air, and I know these things mean so much to you, being able to even go to school as a college graduate. Is that something you'd like to share with us right now?
Well, when I got up, see, I started in the first grade in a two-room schoolhouse way out in North Kansas City, way out in the suburbs. And then my folks moved to Kansas City when I was in the first grade. And I was, it was after November, so I was 5 years old then. And they didn't want to put me in the first grade. But my folks insisted, and I... there were no tests in those days, so I went right into first grade. Mm-hmm. So, and there was only 7 grades of grade school. Mm-hmm. So I got out of grade school when I was 12, started the high school when I was out of high school when I was 16, and started to the university when I was 16. So mm-hmm. 4 years of high school, just 7 years, no preschool, no kindergarten. That didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And so I was out of high school at 16 and dancing in the clubs. I could pay my own tuition, so I started the college.
Yeah. And that must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like I said, at the University of Kansas City, there's just about 1,000 people mm-hmm. on campus, because the men were all, this is during the war, mm-hmm. the men were in service, mm-hmm. were being drafted regularly, and So there were just a little over 1,000 people, and you could count a dozen men on campus.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And but we had the South American Aviation Cadets were studying English on campus, and then we had the Navy dental students who were in the Navy. So, you know, by my sophomore year, we were loaded with uniforms.
Tell us about just your experiences performing. I know you performed, is it in Korea? Were you
on USO?
Can you share a little bit of that with us?
On USO, I auditioned for USO when I was like 16 or 17 and was too young. And so that was during World War II. Mm-hmm. But then when I was older in New York, I auditioned for USO during the Korean War. So I went to Korea, and we performed. We had 10-member troop, and there were three were musicians, and then there were two husband and wife teams, a girl singer, and I was the dancer. Mm-hmm. And so we performed all over the place in Korea and Seoul, and then Kogi-do Island, and the stages were slanted sometimes, and they had, I danced in high heels that time, and there would be these big knot holes, and the servicemen would build the stage. They knew the USO show was coming, so they would build the stage, and the wood planks would have knot holes in them. My heel got stuck in a knot hole once. Once I did a high kick, and my shoe went flying.
You must love that.
And it was in the fall. I think we went in September, and we were there through November, and it was cold and the men would be out, you know, it's all outside. Mm-hmm. And I'm in my brief costume and the men mm-hmm. are in their jackets and hand warmers and sitting out there and I'm twirling batons and all this. I ended up with severe bronchitis. But yeah. But that's what you do.
And who else did you travel with? Was that where you traveled with Bob Hope?
Oh, no. This was a regular USO show.
Oh, okay.
I did when Bob Hope was doing his radio shows. I was still radio, doing his radio shows at college campuses. So I did some theaters and college campus tours with Bob Hope. Mm-hmm. And
Billy, currently, one of the things that you do is teach at City in Motion, which is just right next door to KKFI.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about who you teach and your experiences when people come in to take lessons from you.
Now, I teach a beginning class and an intermediate. Those that go through the beginning class for a year develop onto the intermediate, and then I have an advanced class there. And in my classes, I think I have two or three attorneys and nurse. And one class I had a grief counselor and a midwife. And I said, we got you going and coming. And so professional people are taking my classes. And then in one class I have choreographer for African dance troupe, and she does sensational African dance, but she's doing the tap class. She's for several years, and then Dennis, you probably know Dennis Porter, who has Cirque du Gay, and does wonderful and with the clowning, and then Beth Bird's been a student, mm-hmm. and with the clowning, so I have professional people in their own world of performing that are doing tap dance too. So, so we have fun, and you have joy, rejoice in the dance, and so anyone can do it. I've had a lady; she can't come to City in Motion because there's steps, but. She's come down to the Bollinger Center, mm-hmm. and where there's an elevator, and she's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And she used to be a dancer, danced up until like 7 years ago, and then she couldn't walk anymore, so she's in the wheelchair, and she sits there and wiggles her feet and does all the stuff beautifully, beautiful footwork.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is it? That's something that I think is important to understand as well. Sometimes we think some of our handicaps or hang-ups, oh, well, I can't do that. And you just shared, you know, someone in their wheelchair wiggling their feet. What is it about movement? You did some sort of a study where you can see what happens with, let me see, Billy. I think it was something with a recording. Was it a recording? Recording movement on paper?
Oh, that's Laban notation. Yes, and I taught that at the Juilliard School. Mm-hmm. It's a system of writing down movement. Mm-hmm. And video captures a performance. It doesn't necessarily say what the choreographer wanted. Mm-hmm. So Rudolf von Laban started the system. He devised the system. And we have these symbols, and they go on a vertical staff, which marks out the time. So very accurately, you can get the timing of the movement, and the different columns show the parts of the body that move. And so I studied that and started at Connecticut College and then in New York, and then became one of the second-generation pioneers of Laban notation. So it records movement, and which is more accurate, actually, from what the choreographer wanted, than what you get on video. But dance evolves, because I worked with George Balanchine and recorded Aegon, which every measure is a different meter a different beat. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And really, you know, crazy rhythms. Well, we have to write that and get break down those rhythms very accurately and get the movement. So it's best to notate, we call it notating, notate a work while the choreographer is putting it together. And then I've notated Bob Fosse's work and Agnes DeMille's and a lot of those. And then you preserve the dance. So some of the dances from the 1920s are preserved in Laba notation. That was before film and video. So we can go back to the actual thing that those pioneers in modern dance, it started out with modern dance and ballet. Mm-hmm. And then I'm one of those that has gone on and done it in tap dance. And when I devise the tap steps, I notate it and take the notation notes in the class.
Can you give an example of like what that might sound like as you're writing it down and then the picture that it might give to somebody? To see the what the choreographer meant, for example?
Well, I'm not sure on the radio that... I just wrote an article for the Dance Notation Bureau and about my different experiences, like with Balanchine, when Balanchine... Todd Bolander was the soloist in one of the pieces I notated in New York, and 1958 this was. And the movement that Balanchine described was low level and very dynamic. And the ballet dancers, who in those days were limited with their ballet work, were stretched legs and very pulled up. And they had difficulty, or they didn't quite understand what Balanchine was doing, which was lower and more dynamic. And so then they went out on the road for 2 years, and I was called back in to check the notation again, and they've lost Balanchine's things completely. Todd, I was working with Todd again, and then he demonstrated something, and I said, well, what I've written is this, and Balanchine said, oh, yes, but now we do it this way. So over a year of performing, the choreography changed. And then 30 years later, when Eddie Vallela was here, and I interviewed him on my TV show, because Todd had gone on to do choreography in Europe, and 18-year-old Eddie Vallela replaced him. And now Eddie was doing high kicks where Todd was doing straight out, strong, you know, strong, a saraband, and doing, according to what a saraband really was, when Eddie's doing all this, so on my TV show, he says, yeah, I was a rambunctious young dancer then, and he says, but Balanchine said, do it his own way, don't copy Todd Bolander. So the choreography changed. So that's the article I just wrote, you know, what is the real choreography as develops over time, and we can't tell, but we notate what the choreographer wants.
And to see some of this, it may be that Time Warner Access Cable is a place people can look you up to see some examples of this.
Well, I don't think we have any examples of that, but we probably, if the dance notate, if I knew what their email was, the articles I've written would be on that. But
well, it sounds like a great way to make a historical note of these things. Maybe there'll be some way you can connect with the American Jazz Museum or something like that. You never know. But would be a good thing to see.
Yes, yes. Well, I've done shows. I produced a couple of shows at the Jazz Museum and at the Gem, and we could get into that too.
It was a great segue because I was just going to ask you, Billy, you're very active in the jazz community, and just parlaying into the second half of our interview here, if you'd like to share just your experience with jazz and with tap. And
well, I'm an elder statesman of jazz, and that when for our National Tap Dance Day back in the year 2000, we did a show at the... We used the Jazz Museum and the whole foyer there, and had a whole event going on there. And then we did shows at the Gem Theater and taught classes there in the foyer. And I brought in major stars, the Nicholas Brothers and Charlie Atkins, who was the one who at that, he was former great tap dancer with Honey Coles and Charlie Atkins. But Charlie then had been choreographing works for the Temptations and doing all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So we had the, oh, and the thing that I hope is still in the baseball museum, Buck O'Neill was then, was he 90 yet? I think he was. And when I would go to the funerals of some of our jazz musicians there at the museum, Buck and the coffin would be there. Buck would always grab me and we'd dance around the coffin. Mm-hmm. And so when I produced a show at Yardley Hall called Music of Our Lives, and it was sort of a cavalcade of dance. We went through the Charleston era and before the ragtime dances and on through to present time. So I had Buck O'Neill dance to take me out to the ball game. And he could do it. And I had two male dancers, one on either side of him, you know, studying him. And the barbershop quartet did a big introduction where I sort of rewrote the lyrics, you know, and something or other that Buck O'Neill's the real deal and we've got him here. He's real life. And so that's videotaped and in the baseball museum that I choreographed. But we rehearsed it all there in the museum and Buck for the whole summer.
Speaking of video, this whole interview is being video. We're on video right now with Kevin McKinney, who's doing a documentary of you, which I'm sure is going to be great. You have so many great stories to tell just in this small segment here. We've heard a lot. So what was the name of your studio again, Kevin?
Oh, I'm Good Egg.
Good Egg is the name of the studio. But Billy, there's just so much more we could talk to you about.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being here, Billy, and just sharing your story. And even when before the interview, you were moved to tears on certain on certain things. So I appreciate you for being in the community and dancing. And as I shared with you earlier, I share with my grandmother last night, who's 81, that I'd be interviewing someone who at the time I thought you were 87, but you told me you're 88, almost 89. And it really inspired my grandmother. She's very lively, believes in being active. She says, if you lay down, you go down. I'm just going to keep moving.
Right.
So
you have to keep moving.
Yeah.
You keep moving and keep doing it. And hopefully no one stops you. If they stop you, then that's the end. Mm-hmm. But you got to keep going. And don't get discouraged. If I can say something real quickly, mm-hmm. in New York, this lady came in. She was in her 70s. And, of course, that time I was much younger. And she said she was going to visit. She was taking my tap classes and doing very well. She was going to visit her grandchildren in California. Mm-hmm. And so she took private lessons so she could learn the soft shoe. I'm going to cry. And so she went out to California, and I didn't see her again after that. So I asked her friend what happened to her. She says, oh, she went out there and she danced for her kids. And they said, Grandma, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for doing that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at your age, you shouldn't be dancing. Mm-hmm. And she was crushed. And I think that is a crime.
Yeah.
So don't do that. And kids can be cruel. Don't listen to them.
And I would like to say that I spoke with Billy a little bit and found out she is a majorly strong feminist. We have some very same beliefs.
Well, thank you so much again, Billy. We appreciate it. And with that, we are going to take a station break, and we will be back.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Support for KKFI provided by the 5th Annual Women's Equality Week, August 21st through August 28th. Pushing back, marching forward. Women's suffrage turns 96 August 26th, and Women's Equality Week Coalition presents a week of events celebrating women's achievements. Events kick off Sunday, August 21st, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Kansas City Jazz Museum. For more information, go to www.facebook.com/womensequalitygkc. You can also follow them on Twitter at WEGKC.
On the next From the Vault.
We shall overcome. Those were the voices of a group of Negro and white people on Edisto Island singing the theme song of the Highlander Folk School.
We present a 1960 documentary on the Highlander Folk School, Wednesday morning at 5. Johnson County Meals on Wheels is looking for some volunteers. If you are interested, please contact them at 913-715-8895. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio.
Hi, we're back on Every Woman here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio Station. And we're following up after that really great interview with Miss Billie Mahoney with our second interview with Karen Griffin. Karen is the community coordinator at the American Jazz Museum, and we're here to find out what does that mean, community coordinator. So, Karen, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you happened to become the community coordinator at the Kansas City the American Jazz Museum?
Hello. First, I'd like to say hi and thank you for inviting me. I'm humble and really honored to be here. The way I came about being the community outreach coordinator at the American Jazz Museum is, I have to say, it goes way back when I worked in corporate America. I worked at 13 agencies, and I didn't realize I worked at that many, but wow. I was inspired by Adele Hall mm-hmm. at Hallmark Cards, and when I heard how many she did, I was like, I can do that too. At the American Jazz Museum, I was a tour docent and the education assistant for 2 years. And as you all know, we just got our new executive director, Miss Chepto Casatani Buckner. Mm-hmm. That sister is fabulous. And I tell everybody, I said, you know something? We got somebody to know what color lipstick to put on with her outfit. And that's what makes her powerful. This woman saw something in me. And
We are moving.
For her to
moving in here.
For her to see something in me was very moving and powerful. And she says, Karen, I need you in the community. And I was honored for her to say that because I grew up in the 18th and Vine District. I grew up when there was nothing there. I went to Addicts Elementary School. I went to Lincoln High School. I went to the Girls and Boys Club that was on 19th and Pacelle. I remember in 1983 mm-hmm. when Mr. Ollie Gates gave me Girl of the Year, and that was such mm-hmm. an honor.
Wow.
And when I still see him, I'll be like, Mr. Gates, do you remember you giving that award? He's like, yeah. I remember going to Coach's Council, and we had Peachtree. A lot of people are not aware what went on in that neighborhood. We had Dixieland's Barbecue. That's where you would go get a bag of fries for 50 cents and a Pepsi, and we would bug Mr. McDaniels at the Girls and Boys Club. Can you just give me a dime? You worked up to your 50 cents. But it come from being a child in the neighborhood and just being respectful in the neighborhood. But it comes from these three things I'm going to tell you. And it comes from being faithful, following, and this is my fruit. And it's the fruit. It's all because I was a kid, and my mom, may God rest her soul, she put her long white robe on 2 days after Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. I'm honored to be here, but because my mom just took time out to teach me, to care for me, to hold me, to understand and help me to be respectful in my neighborhood, this is my fruit. Mm-hmm. So now I'm giving back to the community, which I talk from everybody from no hair to gray hair, and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful thing to be able to do that in the museum. I get an opportunity to reach out to everybody, which is really good, but to be able to share this on the radio with Kansas City women, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some girls.
Yeah.
And that's GYLRLZ. So to be able to do that and get other women inspired, and just to be a part of the American Jazz Museum is a good opportunity.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that out about showing that respect, because I know you do that. Even meeting you say yes, Miss Marvita, yes, Miss
yes, ma'am.
Mr. Miss, you know, to everybody that you meet, and that's something that stands out. And other people, when they see that, they receive that as okay. Let me take a moment, because not everybody does that anymore, and that does bring out a certain kind of response from people. And that's the thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because when you do your show, the show that you do, it engages, like you said, everybody from no hair to gray hair in the room. Karen does a show in the Blue Room of the Jazz Museum. I call it a show, but it's actually a historical, I don't know what to call it, a historical montage about the artists who are featured in the Jazz Museum.
Right.
And that little show that you do is something that really engages the customers when they come to the museum.
Yes.
Can you tell us who are those people that you talk about so much, and how did you come about putting on the show that you're doing?
Okay, so what I do is, and this is for anyone who schedules a tour at the museum, of course they're not aware of the presentation they're going to get. They think they're just going to walk through the museum. When I first started, I was not very good at all, and so I decided I got to figure out how to get them engaged. And so after doing my research and looking at the Ken Burns Jazz CD collection, I decided I need to find a way to get people engaged. So the four masters that we house at the American Jazz Museum, of course, Lady of Song, Queen of Soul, that's Miss Ella Jane Fitzgerald, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other person I talk about is no other than Mr. Edward Kennedy Ellington. See, people don't know him by his real name, the name his mama put on his birth certificate. You know, they know him as the Duke. And, of course, the other person I talk about is Mr. Louis Satchmo Armstrong. And then last but not least, Kansas City's very own, Mr. Charlie Yardbird Parker.
Okay, now you can't give away anymore.
So
they have to come and see.
Yes, they have to come. So those are the four main masters I talk about. But the beauty of it is to get people engaged, to get them to hold their edge of their seats and want to come back and want to explore, is I dress them up. So not only do they dress up, they have a prompt, but not only do they have a prompt, they have to read one of those master's quotes as well. Oops, I gave that away. No, you have to read one of the master's quotes to get you involved. And I've learned to be drama. And it's fun to have drama. And I cry in my presentation. I laugh in the presentation. I joke in the presentation just to get you involved. Because I don't know what you know about jazz and what you don't know about jazz. But it's my responsibility to educate you about jazz that we house at the American Jazz Museum.
I have a question for you, Mrs. Ebony. A question for you on jazz and what... Sometimes I hear people say, oh, well, I don't really like jazz, but they may like a song that has a lot of jazz influences in it, and we don't really realize that. And then even kind of the history of jazz and that being a form, a genre of music that we've used as a people. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to just kind of that history on what jazz is and how it's important and the influences that it has in modern day music?
I would love to speak to that. So when I do my presentation, I hear a lot of people say, I don't like jazz. Mm-hmm. I said, you know something, you do like jazz. You just don't understand it, and you're at the point in your time in life, you're not appreciating it. Because the jazz you listen to now, we're sowing their fruit. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? We're mm-hmm. we're reaping their harvest, I'll put it like that. So when I tell a lot of people, I say, when you really listen to jazz, some people say, oh, is this too long? I said, no, it's not too long. I said, what it is you're listening to, you listen to every single person telling his story through his instrument. You see, because there was a time that jazz wasn't spelled with two Z's, it was spelled with two S's. And when Duke was performing, they used to call it jungle music. Well, he didn't want his music to be called jazz either. He used to call it Negro folk music. Mm-hmm. You see, because there was a time, if you really think about it, there was a time jazz wasn't even wrote down. You didn't have to write it down because it came from the thumping of your heartbeat. It came from your inner soul. It came from you crying and hurting in the field. So what you going to write your story down for? That's your story. Mm-hmm. And then when they figured out that they can write it down, that's the reason why a lot of tunes are recycled. So until people really get appreciation and understanding and the love of jazz, then they'll understand, oh, this is what I'm listening to? I'm like, yeah, that's what you're listening to. Here's a prime example. How old is Queen Elizabeth now? Do you guys know?
She's 90.
She's 90. Mm-hmm. Duke Ellington wrote a song for Queen Elizabeth, and he titled it The Queen's Sweets. And he said, do not publicize my song until my death. You don't get no better than that. Mm-hmm. So that just lets you know that that sound of that jazz is still out there. Mm-hmm. The young people that even come to the museum, they love it. They love do. It. And then when I see the little kids, okay, jazz storytelling, mm-hmm. they're into it. So we're mm-hmm. feeding them at a young age, mm-hmm. even though they may change the tune and get earlier. But as at the American Jazz Museum, what we're doing to the young kids right now, like we have Jazz Academy coming up. Mm-hmm. So we're giving children an opportunity to learn jazz. But what the American Jazz Museum is doing right now in our prom is that we're water, weeding, and feeding children. So when they become our age, you know, girls with gray knees, but we cute, they will understand, have appreciation to jazz, and their tune will still go, and you won't have to worry about it dying. I just hear a lot of people say, oh, it's dying. It ain't dying. No. Yeah, it grew up in New Orleans, but it lives in Kansas City. Yeah.
Your enthusiasm is contagious. Oh. It's just exciting. Because I would be one of those people who's like, I'm not thinking I like much jazz.
Right, right.
I remember buying Thelonious Monk and Mose Allison.
Yes.
I love Mose Allison.
Yes.
Who else am I thinking about? But some of the stuff I hear, I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. And it's because you haven't really been fed to you to really sit. And when people come to the Blue Room, it's a quiet session. It's for you to sit there and listen. And listen to every single piece, not every single tune, but listen to every single piece and listen to each one of them telling their story. If you haven't been to the American Jazz Museum, because we have the Blue Room, the Blue Room's open on Monday nights, we're open on Thursday nights, every third Thursday is Latin jazz, we open on Friday nights, and we also open on Saturday nights. And Sunday nights is for our younger generation, too, because you got to get them. Mm-hmm. If we don't keep water weeding, feeding this younger generation, right. eventually it will die off. Mm-hmm. But the beauty part of it, you have old jazz films, too. So we have a film collection there also, John H. Baker's film yes. collection. You know, I always show the kids what Marilyn Monroe and Anna Nicole, who they wanted to look like, and her name is Peggy Lee. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen Peggy right. Lee perform, mm-hmm. come to the American Jazz Museum and just see that video. But not only that, Elvis Presley got his mouth twist like Peggy Lee. And I'm looking, I'm like, that's Peggy Lee. So mm-hmm. jazz is just someone watching someone, taking it, putting the piece together, and making it better than what it is. So yeah. I love jazz.
I can't help but go back to the experience that happens when you do go to the jazz museum. It's just so lit up. It's so alive and
Thank
vibrant.
You.
When I went to go on a tour, I really wasn't knowing what to expect. But I walk in and there are children sitting on the floor. And next, in front of them is a small band setting up and having fun with the kids. And they're, like you said, all so excited on the edge of their seat. But that's not all. So I need to go around the corner to meet the guys from the community college from Minnesota or Wisconsin who were visiting.
Right.
You know, and so it's just so much activity. It's so great to see that there's so much going on at the Jazz Museum.
Yes.
How much more do we have to look forward to?
Oh, there's plenty more. There's always more. We can't tell everybody.
What about the murals?
Oh,
what
the
about,
murals.
Yeah,
yes.
What was all behind that?
So the murals. The murals came about a group of us sitting down at the round table, and it's because of all the differences we had, all the violence we have going on, and it takes 18th and Vine, where at one time, and then people have to understand and be aware of what that demographic was,
mm-hmm.
Because we are the, if people really look at it, where the American Jazz Museum sit right now, we're in the heart of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. If you are going from north to south on 35, you're crossing in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going from east to west, you're crossing in our backyard. So that is the crossroad.
Mm-hmm.
So what better way to make that crossroad? Because that's your peace sign. That's mm-hmm. your Jesus, if you don't understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's right there on the corner of 18th and Vine. So we got together, of course, with Chepto, our executive director, Chepto Constantine Buckner, myself, Mike Sweeney, Michael Toombs, Jason Bates, a lot of us came together and was like, okay, we got to do something. And because the youth was like, we really need to do something. Jason Bates is a part of the Neo Soul. And they always meet the Blue Room. He's like, okay, let's do this. Let's do a mural. So I don't know if you saw on the news last Friday, I was on the news when we were promoting that. Mm-hmm. So what it was is that they took 12 and Vine, 18 Vine, and Michael Toombs and collections from the Black Archives and the American Jazz Museum. He did a huge collage. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, well, you know something? Even though in America, and I think it's so funny, in America we're the only ones that are called black and whites. Mm-hmm. But if you go overseas, you're called an American, which I don't understand that. That mm-hmm. just... You heard my presentation. If you haven't heard my presentation, come to the American Jazz Museum and I'll explain that to you. But the mural, when we were painting, you don't know who painted what part of that mural. All it was a color. Mm-hmm. Because, see, when God painted the world, he painted it multiple colors. Mm-hmm. Right? But you can't see what color he is because he's multiple colors. The mural is the exact same thing. Multiple people painted it multiple colors. So stay tuned for that. We are going to reveal that. We haven't determined when, but right now you can come down on Monday nights, 5 to 7:30, paint the mural.
Oh.
And Thursdays. We're trying to make sure our time is set up on Thursdays because American Jazz Museum also has public programming too.
I see.
So we're going to try to make it to where you can still come down and paint. We are going to turn the mural into a coloring book, mm-hmm. believe it or not.
Oh, great.
Right. Everybody who painted the mural, I had them to sign their name. So their names will be also, I know, in the color books. Remember, you remember Big Chief Tablet back in the day? So it's going to be in that format instead of a regular color book. Because, you know, everybody do that. But ours is going to be Big Chief Tablet.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so anybody can, you know, you can buy it. And I think it's going to be good. So that's why I said there's more and more coming and more coming.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been to Jazz Speak for Life, please come by and see that as well.
Definitely. Well, are you going to be at the Women's Equality Week kickoff next Sunday, August 21, at 5:30 to 7 p.m.
I would have to say yes. If my knees are right, I got gray knees. They're 50 years old. Because I'm doing the jazz tour where I'm riding 10 miles next Saturday. So if my knees are not elastic and rubber bandish, I'll be there. I will be there front and center. Yes, ma'am.
Good. Which kind of, you've got some things here to talk about, don't you?
Yes. So what we have, the paperwork I'm sharing with these ladies is the 18th and 9th First Fridays. If you are an artist and you do any kind of artwork, we want you to come join us on First Fridays. 18th and Vine. What we're doing right now is that we're just expanding the 18th Street, the stretch of art and the stretch mm-hmm. of love. So we've been going right now since May 6th. We've had turnout. The turnouts have been amazing. And people are like, can I do a spot? Yes, come mm-hmm. down. We just ask that you be there at 3 o'clock. No later than 3 because we start at 4 and we end at 9. And then in the atrium, like you said, is there more? Mm-hmm. We also do line dancing and two-stepping and salsa.
All right,
so it just depends. It just depends on how your feet move. If they all move to the left, we'll still work with you and get you to go to the right. You understand? So we do have line dancing, and that starts from 7:30 to 10. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, there's the Jazz Beat for Life, where the exhibit will be open. And like I said, every first Friday. And then, we also have our Kansas City Jazz Academy, which is coming up this September. We're looking for children all over, especially in the communities, to come. Mm-hmm. Go to AmericanJazzMuseum.org, and you'll see all the information there. You'll contact Mr. Bill McKinney, which is the education manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, last but not least, Jazz Speak for Life. Like I said, if you have not been down there to see that exhibit, please do. It's based off the civil rights movement. We have pieces in there done by Mr. Charles Bibbs from Riverside, California, and one of the all-time greats, the legendary Mr. Ed Dwight. If you want to purchase any of those pieces, we'll be glad to help you pack mm-hmm. them up and take them home with you. Hope you saved all your lunch money from the third grade. But yes, we have other local artists is there too. Jessica Kerr Moore. Oh my God, you have to really come and see her piece. She has her body from when she was born. That's what I'm going to say. She has her born body, and she has poetry written all over her body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing. So if you have not came, please, please come. It's going to leave September 30th, and you'll never see it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like so much. There's such an impact going on at the Jazz Museum. They want to make sure that we get hit
yes.
by the revitalization that's going on
yes.
there. I think one thing that it reminded me of at the last Thursday when they were painting the murals, there were so many people on 18th and Vine mm-hmm. on that block. And that's what you need. You need people walking up and down the street.
Right.
And I think that's part of what's happening. And What's going to be, is there anything to look forward to in the fall for like the jazz festival or anything like that?
So we're not doing, I know, if I say we're doing the festival, so we're not doing the festival this year. We're going on 20 years old next year. I was like, wow. So we're going on 20 years old next year. So the plan is to wait and kick off next year. That's what we're going to do it this next year. Yeah. Of course, today, you know, like with us being busy every Friday, sometimes we need a break. You know, so like today we have, there's a hot dog fest going on that the Negro League Baseball Museum is doing. So the hot dog fest is kicking off. You still got the gym theater that's still up and running. You have exhibits in there. And a lot of people, when they come to the museums, they don't realize what they're really stepping into. Mm-hmm. I tell everybody, we are a campus. We are art, which is our gallery. We are history. Mm-hmm. We are a performance venue. And then we even rent out the facility. A lot of people's like, what? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, a little boy had his 9-year-old birthday party in the blue room. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
He does.
But there's always, there's always, always something going on. If not, we'll make it go on for you.
And I understand that from the 18th and Vine area,
yes,
there's a First Friday, there's like transportation into the crossroads. There's plenty like parking over there. You can start at 18th and Vine.
I haven't made it over there because I'm at my house, so I'm sure it is. But see, here's another thing a lot of people are not aware. If you go back in history and look in time, there used to be a subway that ran straight down the middle of 18th and Vine.
Oh,
yes,
really?
And a lot of people did not know that. I was like, oh, there's been subways way back in the day.
Okay.
But even in the 20s and the 30s, 18th and Vine was the area you came to. That's where you had, it was a predominant area. So if you come and see the film called A People's Journey, I encourage everybody, come see that film, get some knowledge, and understand where the Kansas City Monarchs played at. Everybody's like, I'm going to the stadium. I'm like, why? You go to the stadium that was in the city. I remember as a kid watching someone play, but I don't remember who they played. And they played, and the stadium was right behind Lincoln High School.
Oh.
Right behind. So if you have a chance, go down 22nd in Brooklyn, you'd be like, there's a stadium. Yes, there was a stadium here. So, yes.
A lot of the things that you've spoken about today, I feel, speak to our need to have a deeper understanding and appreciation of our own culture.
Yes, ma'am.
And things that have already been done.
Yes, ma'am.
That maybe we've forgotten about. And to kind of take a step in and a step back in a way.
Yes.
In order to move forward, you know, to take that step back and say, hey, I mean, this is how we've told our stories over the years. This is where we are, where maybe we didn't physically see ourselves a lot or read about ourselves a lot in certain modern text,
yes,
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But we've definitely been represented in many ways than we realize.
I'm amazed how the out-of-towners bring the locals.
Mm-hmm.
And the local says, oh, yeah, I live here. And out-of-towners say, yeah, I brought them. I say, thank you, out-of-towners, for bringing the locals. And I always support all our local businesses in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like, people say, okay, where's the best place to eat? And I says, okay, what you want to do? Do you want to wipe from ear to ear with your hand, you know, the back of your hand? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to wipe with a napkin from corner to corner?
Mm-hmm.
So I sent them up to either Arthur Bryant's, which my dad knew Arthur Bryant's. We had that every Friday night. I am not a big, I love you, Arthur. And the other place would be Gates. So you got some people don't want barbecue and they want soul food. And I was like, well, if you go to 12th in Brooklyn, you'll find whatever you need. You'll get something. And then I'll say, just get the peach cobbler and take it home and eat it in the bed. Don't eat it there. But like you said, we're back to the history. I think people, if you don't remember the history or don't understand your history or forgot about your history, come back to 18th and Vine and get the history. I tell all the young children that come, they are my new mustard seeds. And it's my responsibility to water, weed, and feed them. Because if I don't water, weed, and feed them, they will not have the experience of being in Kansas City and on the corner of 18th and Vine, where it all started for a lot of African Americans to succeed. And especially, you know, all-time great Buck O'Neill. He opens up the film, and I tell everybody, I say, I'm honored to be in this spot I'm in right now, to keep it going, to keep it, even with Horace Peterson, his daughter. Oh, my God. Marquita Peterson, she's fabulous. So it's good.
Well, Karen, we want to thank you so much for coming down to talk with us, share this great party day we had here with Billy Mahoney first, and now following up with you and that link that's there. Mm-hmm. We had the past and the present as far as jazz, and actually it was the present and the present as far as Billy is concerned.
I know, but I'm honored to just be by her that dances, because yes. we just start jazz move me for seniors.
So
seniors
sure,
who want to come dance,
sure
dance.
That she'll
what
be
a great connection.
There
yes.
on the scene, definitely. And there's so many things going on at the Jazz Museum for all of you listeners out there. Make sure you check it out. You can go on a way to find out about what's going on at the Jazz Museum is if you you have a website,
American Jazz
at
Museum.
Mm-hmm. AmericanJazzMuseum.org.
There you go.
And there are plenty of things to find out there if you go there. So we'd like to thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. I am so honored. Thank You're going to make me cry.
Yeah. Now, Sharon, are you going to share a little bit more before we go
yes,
about Women's
yes,
Equality Week?
Yes, Women's Equality Week is in its fifth annual week-long of events in Kansas City. As I said, it's the kickoff on next Sunday, August 21, at 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the American Jazz Museum. And then, Amy, we've been listening to some promos by her. Every woman, by the way, is a sponsor mm-hmm. of the Women's Equality Week. And KKFI, I'm sorry, we're a coalition member, and KKFI is a sponsor of that. Next week, we're opening the house here at 2 p.m. for the Women's Equality Coalition to come in for some appetizers and fun, and then go on the air live with us at 3 to talk about the Women's Equality Week of events and their experiences, and got some people that are just dying to get on air to talk about being a woman in this day and age. Looking forward to that. And then the following week, we're planning, it's not tied down yet, but we're planning to broadcast offsite at the Unicorn Theater, and it's LGBTQ programming. 10th Voice is in cahoots with us on that. Una Nalin, Elizabeth. I'm forgetting.
Anderson.
Elizabeth Thank
Anderson.
You, Elizabeth Anderson, Linda Wilson will be presenting to an audience at the Unicorn Theater.
Fantastic.
And so we're excited about that.
And if that's not enough, I do want to share, especially given our conversation today, I'm a part of it's open to the community, a conversation on culture and race. It's kind of kitchen table style. It's coming up this Friday, August the 19th, and it's at Unity Southeast Church in Kansas City, which is right in front of Southeast High School on 3421 Meyer. It's from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., and we just pick a topic. And people come together, people you know and don't know, and we have a conversation about it. And so there's a lot, you know, a lot that we're dealing with now, and that's going on with culture and race. So on the 19th, this coming Friday at 6:30, if you'd like to come out and enjoy us with that conversation and just create it yourself, because sometimes we need to hear our own, you know, stories and not have things dictated to us.
Right.
And we can speak from our own perspective. So that's Friday, August the 19th, 6:30 to 7:30 at Unity Southeast Church in Kansas City.
And that's on
Friday,
63rd Street.
Well, it's
Meyer
near
Boulevard.
There. Yeah, it's on Meyer Boulevard. It's right in front of, two blocks west of Swope Park, Swope Park, and then it's right in front of Southeast High School. But with that being said, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to the Every Woman Show and being with us every week at 3 o'clock. And for those of you who are online at KKFI.org, we appreciate you staying with us. Stay tuned for guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And then right up next is Urban Connections with Donna Wolf. Have a great weekend, everybody. All right.